This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, it is Long Shots. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds, VSiN's golf betting podcast here. And if you're finding us over on the web, hello, this is our new home. We have our own channel now over on YouTube. If you're listening to the audio version of this, we'll go into the description. We'll have a link to our new YouTube channel. And Kelly Bidlin, we're separating ourselves from VSiN. We're leaving the big ship, the mothership. We're gone. We're taking, we left the Death Star, and we're on one of those little fighters. And we're going to get, hopefully we don't get shot down by, in one of those little X-Wing fighters that we're leaving the Death Star with here. But going out X-Wing's on our own, really we're going to see guys. If we can't build up this channel. It allows us a little bit more freedom if we want to do some live stuff, if we want to do extra content. It's not kind of clouding the, muddying up the feed over there on the regular VSiN. So all golf all the time here on the new YouTube channel.
Yep, absolutely. If you go, if you just go to VSiN's YouTube page to check us out, guess what? We're going to make it a little easier and put all the golf content in one space. So you might have seen, if you do are a regular VSiN listener, subscriber, you might have seen that some of the other podcasts have started that as well on our network. We're building up more podcasts, separating them so you can kind of get exactly what you want at the tip of your fingers. How about that?
Wes, it is it's one of those things where we do appreciate not only the views here, but if you want to take the extra little time and hit that subscribe button and maybe even hit the notification button. And if you want to start commenting now on the videos, we will read those and work those into the show as well. So we do want to take the chance of kind of branching away from the main channel. We can be a little bit more interactive with the people that are listening and coming to us each and every week.
Yeah, and we thank everybody for the support over the years. And I know people were asking about when it's going to drop this week. Like Bill Murray said in Caddyshack, I was unavoidably detained. This would ordinarily be on a Tuesday, but we were doing this on a Wednesday because I had a little football game that took some priority on Monday. Ordinarily, we'd be on schedule on Tuesday, so we'll resume that next week. But better late than never, I guess.
Yes, no, absolutely. And Kelly, as we kind of move on here, real quick look back to last week. I got the full on welcome back to golf betting last week, as I thought I was going to have a sweat on Sunday. Wes, I'm sure you thought you were going to have a sweat on Sunday as well. I'm sitting there. Corey Connors goes out, has a great round. I've got Harry Hall, who had put together three great rounds. I'm like, hey, I got one of the best putters in the world on a course that seems like you're going to need to putt well. I'm going to be in the mix of this thing. And then Harry Hall decided to go out. Basically, everybody in the field played well, except for Corey Connors and Harry Hall. So I did not have a sweat at all when I thought I was going to have a two-way sweat here in this one. As Kelly brings up the leaderboard from last week, you see all the fives and sixes and seven unders. And then you get to Harry Hall, one under. You keep scrolling, you'll finally find Corey Connors because he went one over on Sunday. So, yeah, that was super fun. And again, it was the nice little welcome back to golf betting. You can have three good rounds, but you got to have four good rounds if you're going to win one of these things. And it ends up being Chris Goddorup who gets it done over Ryan Gerard. But Goddorup, honestly, he went out and just won the thing on Sunday. I mean, he went 6 under. I mean, you go out, you go 6 under on Sunday. It's going to be tough when you're already towards the top of the leaderboard. So hats off to him. And Wes, this is a guy that's kind of under the radar.
Yeah.
Wins a tournament every year.
He has for the last three seasons now, Chris Goddorup. By the way, Davis Riley, throw him in there. He was the 54-hole leader by two and ends up finishing T6. So windy conditions, even windier than I think than normal. So we thought it might play in the mid-teens if the winds were going to blow, and they certainly did. But Chris Goddorup goes 6 under on Sunday for a round of 64, and that gives him the win by two over Ryan Gerard. Patrick Rogers finishes third. Robert McIntyre, Jacob Bridgman round out the top five. But Chris Goddorup, becoming a very consistent winner on the PGA Tour. And, he's one of those guys that had a lot of pedigree out of college, out of University of Oklahoma. And, sometimes it takes a couple years for those guys to realize that, but he's starting to realize it right now.
Yeah, good on him. And, Kelly, I think this kind of goes back, and maybe we'll talk about our strategy here in this one as well, but kind of kind of wading into these first few tournaments, not really knowing exactly what everybody's up to, not knowing exactly how things are going to turn out. Because, I mean, you look and we see, you know, Patrick Rogers has a big close. Bob McIntyre has a nice 63 to finish out. He gets up in the lead. But then you get Bridgman and you've got Pendrith and Hodges and all guys that we've mentioned here and there along the way as to kind of liking at some point across the last couple of seasons. But nobody that we talk about on a week-to-week basis. But, you know, we get to these courses that are a little bit easier to score, and we'll certainly we'll be at one of those this week as well. And every one of these dudes can go out and put up rounds like you see. Bridgman with the 6-under. You get the 5-under from Rogers. You get the 6-under from Pendrith. You get the 5-under from Lee Hodges. These are all freaking awesome golfers, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that again this week as well.
Yeah, 100%. I actually thought there was a lot to take away from this event. Like, you know, weather came into play, I think, more than we expected at times. It really, on that Friday afternoon, some guys got, like, it looked like it was tough out there for some of those guys on the greens just putting in the wind. So, yeah, there was that. I think you got, I mean, talked about Goddard already. I think Goddard firmly reminding us of that he's capable of this, and to make this kind of statement early in the season, I think is big. Put him on the radar for the rest of the year. And then I second guy, right? Ryan Gerard. How often were you, I mean, especially you, Matt, how often were you betting him last year, right? Like, this is a guy that kind of got on our radar last year, and it's an impressive second place finish. Let's see what he can do. I think Bobby Mack showing up and saying, hey, you know, played great end of last year, I'm still here. Thought that was pretty statement top five. Daniel Berger pushed his way all the way up there, right? Like, we've been waiting for that. He was great beginning last year and kind of tailed off. See if he can hold it up. I thought it was great event. Look, we can't deliver you winners every week, but we're pretty good at delivering you great ball strikers. And I think Corey Connors and Siwoo Kim are at the top two. So we got that done.
Yeah, it's again, we'll really get into the mix here in a couple of weeks. And I think that this tournament right here, as we head to the Amex over in Coachella Valley here, Wes, you know, it is a tournament we've talked about for the last few years here on the pod. It's gimmicky. It's a pro-am. It's the course rotation deal. It is pin locations are going to be in prime locations. We're going to get short rough. They can't have these AMs out there, you know, hacking it up, shooting 125. So they've got to keep, you know, the short rough. They've got to have the easy pin placements and all the different stuff. And so, you know, this tournament more than any, it's kind of like, normally we'll narrow it down and say, you know what, probably about 40 guys can win this tournament or something like that. I mean, this week you could actually maybe say, like, there's only 40 guys that can't win this tournament, and like everybody else could. And so that's just something that's in these early tournaments, easier tournaments, and certainly in the pro-am format, we're just going to get kind of the resort course type set up, and that's fine, right? I mean, they need to do this for the sponsors and all whatever. It's got to keep the tour healthy and whatnot. From a betting standpoint, I'm not going to say that this is a complete dart throw this week, but I will tell people again, like, don't go super, super heavy in placement markets and head to heads and things and stuff like that. Because I mean, you know, 7-under, 8-under, 9-under, 10-under rounds are going to happen in this tournament.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This, by the way, is the former Bob Hope, referred to as Bob Hope. He hosted this for many years, and resort golf, played on three different courses here. There's the PGA West Stadium course, which is the Pete Dye design. That's going to host the final round. So each player is going to play a different course the first 3 days and then cut to 65. They're all at PGA West on Sunday. There's the Nicklaus Tournament course at PGA West and also La Quinta Country Club. And the Pete Dye Stadium course is probably the hardest of the three. La Quinta and the Nicklaus course, substantially easier. Usually a couple of the easiest courses on the PGA Tour, usually in the top five. By the way, very good field this week. You know, it's usually has a solid field, but not as good as this year's, apparently. 11 of the top 25 in the official world golf rankings are in this field this week. So you do got a lot of names here. One name is Sepp Straka, who we got last year as a 60-1 winner home. He is back 45-1 this time around. But everybody, of course, looking up at Scottie Scheffler, who makes his debut this week at 3-1. And then after that 3-1, Matt, and you can go through the odds board, a big drop off in terms of price.
Yes. Yeah. And you mentioned the field here. It's like the other thing is the good thing about this from an Amex standpoint, they sponsor so many golfers just on their own on the side. And so you've got to get these dudes, you got to get these dudes in to the tournament. So, I mean, you know, you're wondering why Scotty's playing. Scotty's sponsored by Amex, and like Cantlay and Burns and Ludwig and Henley and all of these are all guys that are sponsored by Amex. And so, you know, there's one way to make sure to get dudes to your tournament, and that's to give them money all year long. And so that is what Amex is doing here. So yes, you get the Scotty Schefflers and you get the Ludwigs and the Sam Burns and the Russell Henleys and all of that here in this one, but your overwhelming betting favorite is Scotty Scheffler. And Kelly, I don't know how you feel when you look at this. I mean, sub 3-1. I think if we look at this, for me, this might be the only time that I will say that I don't think that the super low odds actually reflect Scotty's chance of winning this tournament. Because like we said, I mean, this is a tournament that is going to have premier pin placements, 2-inch, easy to hit out of rough. Two of the courses are super easy. The other one isn't even all that hard. Even the one they're going to play twice isn't all that hard for these dudes. And I mean, again, like we are just as likely to be talking about Scotty Scheffler winning this tournament as we are somebody that you would have to scroll three scrolls down and get into the 90, 80, 90, 100 range, because every single one of these dudes is the best golfer you've ever seen in your whole life. And on this type of course, that's where it really shines.
Yeah, Straka 50-1 last year, Nick Dunlap the year before 300-1, Rahm plus 650. Hudson Swafford's won this event twice. Like, we just leave it at that, right? Like, it's this type of course brings a lot of guys into play, and then you're hoping for someone to separate on Saturday, Sunday, and it's probably going to lead. This separator's probably going to have a really hot putter. That's probably where it's going to come. I agree with you. This is an event I would absolutely not bet Scotty Scheffler. Can Scotty Scheffler win this event and win this event by six strokes? Of course he can. He's the best golfer in here. But the ease of the course just brings so many other guys into play. This is maybe the perfect example. Like, I don't know if we're going to get a better example to talk about this all year, Matt. Of just this number, I have absolutely no interest in playing Scotty Scheffler, because I don't think the odds implied are way too heavy.
Is something we talk about often on the podcast here, but for new listeners and just to kind of refresh the memory of everybody here, is, you know, the very top guys, the thing that separates them is the difficulty of the course. They can handle all of the absolute diabolical pin placements, and their accuracy helps with the horrible rough, or they're able to play out of the horrible rough better than other people are, et cetera, all of that. These are the things that separate your Scotty Schefflers and the names at the very, very top from everybody else. Well, when that doesn't come into play, and specifically here in a pro-am format, that just really and truly, like I said, as opposed to saying we think maybe 30 or 40 people could win this tournament, it's more like 30 or 40 can't win this tournament, because everybody else possesses the skills to go out and destroy resort course golf.
To your guys' point, absolutely. 11 of the last 16 winners here at the Amex had odds of 55-1 or higher. I'll give you a few of those. Kelly mentioned a couple. Nick Dunlap, remember, he was an amateur and won this at 300-1, holding off Justin Thomas and Cantlay and some other very elite players. Hudson Swafford, 150-1. Andrew Landry, 200-1 in 2020. Adam Long, 600-1 in 2019, won this thing. Patrick Reed, back in 2014, was 135-1. Mark Wilson, 125-1. You have had some absolute bombs. You've had a couple chalks in here. John Rahm won this event twice at 10-1 and also at plus 650, but this isn't one where you really go chalk heavy. This is one where maybe you play, if you want to do outrights, you play more guys at much smaller increments and try to pepper the board a little bit, which I don't really, really like to do, where you're playing like 10 guys or whatever. But this might be it, because you can get some bombs. This is not going to be just chalk, 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 chalk up and down the leaderboard.
Yeah, no, not at all. And I think that that's kind of going to be how we reflect all of this. Kelly, is I was putting together the model this week. I'm curious as to what you guys ended up doing. Yeah. I did very, very heavy scoring emphasis model. I mean, so it was birdie or better gain, strokes gained on par fives, a little bit of bogey avoidance, because if you make bogeys here, then like it's game's over. You're not going to win this thing.
Bogey avoidance, aka par or better, right? Yeah, which you need to have before you can have birdie or better.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, opportunities gained, guys that are in there, whatever. I did a little bit of the wedge bucket stuff because there's going to be a lot of wedges into this thing. And, you know, can I separate? Maybe it was more of a tiebreaker, right, with like the wedge type stuff. And then put in some putting things to just look at as well from a tiebreaker standpoint, because if there's somebody that I kind of like, but I kind of like the guy right next to him, well, who putts a little bit better? My model, I literally went out to 150 rounds because this is another one of those tournaments, right? Where, as Wes just mentioned, all of these bombs, all these whatever, these are guys coming out of nowhere. So you don't necessarily have to have good form to go and cut up an easy course if you're a professional golfer, right? And so that's why I just kind of went out to 150 rounds and just like took the bird's eye blimp view of what these guys look like, and then kind of went from there as far as honing down the field. I wasn't really into recent form or anything like that, specifically, you know, being here at the beginning of the year as well. I don't know how you went about it, but that was at least the focus for me. Is what are you just good at golf over the last couple of years, right? Or are you good at certain things over the last couple of years? I don't really care if you haven't done it in the last few weeks or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I will. I think you mentioned pretty much every stat that I plugged in. I did do well. I added a little bit of kind of scrambling, sand save stuff, just because this course, stadium course, didn't end up playing a little bit tougher last year after some renovations. A little bit more around the green stuff was demanded from these guys. So I plugged in a little bit of that, but man, I went really light. We talk about that. If you listen to this podcast, we talk about that often. If you're talking about a birdie fest, these guys need to score. You can't be chipping or too much, or else you're going to be out of this tournament. So
you know what? Just what you meant is why I didn't even add it. Like, while it is important, it was more last year. I'm kind of like, but if you're doing that, then I don't know if you have a chance anyway. So like I just ignored it. Probably not the smartest thing. I probably should have done what you did, was put in at least a little bit of it. But
I just left it out
completely because the mindset being, I mean, if you're doing that, then you're probably not winning this thing.
I mean, Matt, I said those exact words on this podcast at least 6 times last year. Like, I don't know, around the green seems to matter here, but if you're chipping too much at this tournament, like, you're not in this tournament. So I don't know if I'm doing right or wrong. I will say this tournament, though, I spent the most amount of time I can remember in a while. Like, I'm talking even the past couple of years. I ran the numbers quick, kind of saw guys that jumped out to me. But as soon as I started to head to sports books to look up odds, I was immediately thrown off by just vastly different numbers that I was seeing book to book. So I really ended up picking some guys where their numbers were pretty far off from where I was seeing them at other books. And like, I'll give an example just to start. I've heard others on him this week as well, but I don't really get how we get to this number with Russell Henley. Like, I like Russell Henley. I bet him a lot last year. He's my second-rated golfer. There's no big shock there. But he goes into the favorite last week at Sony Open and finishes, what, T16? And we come back and he's all the way out, like, mid-20s to open up the week. I thought that was a little curious. And then some other guy, like Berger, I bet this week too. Like, you were finding him in the 60s or in the 30s. Like, it was pretty all over the place. Shopping book to book. So yeah, I don't want to jump ahead, but yes, I did run kind of stats, but I very quickly kind of got off of digging into those too much when I was seeing wildly different numbers book to book.
Wes, anything different that you threw into the model this week that we might have ignored, or something that you maybe focused on a little bit heavier than we did?
Honestly, not that much different. Obviously, approach, I think, is the great place to start here, considering, you know, low rough, like you mentioned, for the amateur. So if you miss fairways, it's not that huge of a deal, even though you could use like good drives, I think, here, because these are not necessarily courses where you got to bomb it. It's 72-10 at the Pete Dye. It's, I believe, 71-47 at the Nicklaus and 70-60 at La Quinta. So these are shorter courses. So did approach, a little bit of good drives gained, birdie or better, obviously. I think still, even though it got made a little bit tougher, you got to be as close to 25 under. It may win it. Yeah. It may not win it, but it'll keep you in contention. I think like that's a baseline number that you're looking for this week. So par five scoring average. I think you got to take advantage of the par fives. If you make pars, it feels like you're making bogeys when you have, like you were saying, Matt, that many people that are in contention here. You know, even guys that you think are middling players can go low. I mentioned all the long shots that have hit here in the past. And then strokes gained putting. I use general putting, even though the greens are Bermuda, but it's dormant this time of year in Southern California. So it's POA overseed, but it's not the bumpy POA like that we're going to get at Torrey Pines next week, or you may get at Riviera. Like, this is just overseed. So the greens will run relatively true. So that's all I used. You could, if you really want to go in the weeds, you could do stroke tee and easy courses, because these are three of the easier courses, even though the stadium course did play a little tougher last year, and it still might. But La Quinta and the Nicklaus courses are like two of the five easiest courses on the PGA Tour. So the average round, I think, was somewhere around 68. So you feel like if you're shooting 68 or 69, you're losing strokes to the field. So, you know, strokes gain easy courses, I think, is something to look at. But it is a little bit tough to model because we don't have like stats necessarily from the Nicklaus tournament course or the La Quinta course in terms of like strokes gained or shot length. You know, they're more readily available, of course, on the Dye Stadium course. So this isn't one where I think you really have to go as knee deep in the weeds as maybe we usually would in terms of a modeling perspective.
No, and that's, I'm glad you said that, because I ran, so I'm normally running 30 different models a week or something. I ran two this, it's like, I'm not going to, I feel like if I do anything further than that, I'm just data mining, and like, I don't want to do that. It's like, listen, they're all awesome. They're going to be great scoring conditions. Like it's rarely windy in this part of, in that part of California. It's like, it's going to be great golf. It's going to be easy scoring conditions. And if I just sit there and like get two into the weeds and try to think that I'm being smart, I'm probably actually just wasting my time.
A lot of this is go with your gut this week, I think. And normally I don't say always go with your gut, you know, because you got to do a little bit of data mining, but not necessarily that much this week. And don't be afraid to say, okay, if you got some triple digit guys, you may have more this week, and take some shots, I think, at this field.
So Kelly Bidlin, you threw in some statistics into your model this week, and you got out some names. I'm curious as to the approach as to how you went about betting this. Did you go just a few guys? Are you going to go deeper and smaller unit size? Like, how, yeah, what's the approach this week?
Well, let's see what I got. I got five on here so far. So yeah, it's a little bit more scattered the board, like Wes was talking about earlier. You usually see me kind of 3, 4, 5 names in that outright territory. I got five with at least, I could be talked into one. I always leave at least one spot open for you guys to talk me into something. I started with Henley. I mentioned him earlier. Got him at 27-1 earlier in the week. Like, I don't know, 25-1 or more on Henley is just kind of a silly number to me. So, look, favorite last week. He finished T19. He lost off the tee last week, but he was great on the approach stats. Great, gained with the putter. Look, I feel like I'm often rating Henley higher than most, but that was sure the case last year, at least. But a T14 here last year at this event, I thought that number was a little silly compared to some of the other names at the top of the board. So, yeah, in on Henley. Next name I dropped down to, and there's some guys, like, I'm going to bring up a few that I thought these numbers were too long on. But, like, Patrick Cantlay, can I bring him up real quick? I don't think any of the three of us are eager to go run and bet Patrick Cantlay any week. But, like, did he just skip TGL because he's, like, hurt or coming back from something that required him to not play in the TGL opener? Like, that's a little weird. And he's hanging out there at 30-1. I mean, look, I think you don't want to mess with anything entering the PGA Tour season. So even the mildest concern could have sidelined him, but I thought that was a little odd. Next guy I played, he's one that we usually talk about playing at tougher courses too, but I fired on him here, Fitzpatrick. And this is, ended up going with a couple guys that have played sort of recently. Like, Fitzpatrick was playing all through the fall, right? Won the DP World Tour Championship, playing great. Wes, I believe you're on him as well. I think I heard that earlier. Look, one of the better putters on tour right now. Not a lot of experience at the course, but I was a little surprised to find him kind of in the mid-40s. So jumped in on Fitzpatrick. Next guy down is Daniel Berger, who I know we had some bets on last week. He finished T6. I thought he looked fantastic last week, and kind of see him at that similar number. This is another one. I got him at 62-1. I've seen him at like 40-1. I've seen him in the 30s so far this week. So just biggest thing, shop around. Make sure you got multiple books up you can go and check at, because I was finding these guys all over the place. Alex Noren, another guy who had a great fall. I really didn't think I'd plan on being back on Alex Noren. this quickly, but won twice in the fall, second at the Hero. This is another guy. I saw him in the 30s and 40s. I got him at 65-1. So shop around. And then Chris Kirk, I'm back on too. He missed the cut last week, had some good ball striking numbers before he missed the cut at 175-1. I like him at 80-1, or at some of the places I saw him that short. I don't know if I like him as much. That's about where I bet him last week. But 175, close to 200-1 on Chris Kirk, I like a lot. So back on him, he's a guy who's got a ton of experience at this course. Again, did miss cut last week, but stats weren't terrible, so I'll go back to him. That's the five for me so far, gentlemen. Henley, Fitzpatrick, all right. Berger, well, Norman, and Kirk.
Be interested to see if any of ours kind of match up here. Wes, what did you end up throwing into the account this week?
Kelly and I actually match up on a couple. I started, and you can make a case for, I think, any of these guys, or at least a few of them at the short prices. Certainly Scotty every week. Ben Griffin, two top tens, by the way, here in the last 2 years. So you can make a case. And Kelly mentioned Cantlay. We might be dealing with the injury. Cantlay's always been good here. I think he's got like four top tens in his last six appearances. So I did consider him, but I did not use him. But the shortest guy I did use, I bought the dip a little bit on Russell Henley at 25-1, where he's the favorite at the Sony, T19. He was fifth in the field for approach, but he lost off the tee, which is usually the strength of his game. If you look at good drives, he's one of the top 10, it seems like, every single year. So Russell Henley, I think, you know, buy maybe a little bit of the dip here. I did that at 25-1. Also did play Daniel Berger, 60-1. T6 at the Sony. He was my nearest pursuer, certainly. 13th in approach, 18th in putting. He's a guy that's been getting off to good starts. Even last year, where he cooled off in the second half of the year, he's runner-up in Phoenix, third in Hilton Head. So if he's going to win, and that would be the first time since February 2021, you would think it's going to be earlier in the year. So Daniel Berger, 60-1. One that we mentioned earlier, Ryan Gerard, 66, who's playing great golf. If you recall, in mid-December, I know we didn't do a long shots for this, but the DP World Tour was still going on, and he flew across a couple oceans to play in the Mauritius Open. And the reason why he did that, he was 57th in the official world golf ranking. And he needed to finish top four over there in Mauritius to get into the top 50 at the end of the calendar year to lock in that Masters. Well, he did just that. He lost in a playoff, so he finished runner-up to Jaden Scaper over there in Mauritius. And now he's got that Masters invitation locked up, kicked off the season, was runner-up last week, fourth in approach. So Ryan Gerard at 66-1. And then my bombs this week, Pearson Coody at 90-1, rather. T13 last week at the Sony, had a 6-under-64, second lowest round of the day, tied with a couple others, including the winner, Chris Goddard. Proven birdie maker. You're going to want those guys this week. Third in the field and birdie or better percentage last season. 13th last year on the PGA Tour for total strokes gain, despite the fact that he didn't win on the tour, is very impressive. So Pearson Coody, 90-1. And then another guy that plays pretty well here, by and large, very consistent. If you play a placement market, this would probably be a guy to play, Blake, because he's never finished worse than 25th here. And that's Alex Smalley at 100-1. A few top 10s last year. Guy that could go low, and he's just one of those guys that it's like you wouldn't be shocked to see him on the leaderboard with this field is wide open. Andrew Novak, 150-1. Difficult to find recent form with players that play kind of sporadic the last 2 months of the year, but he actually stayed active. He was seventh at the RSM, and he was the co-leader, by the way, after 36 holes, shot 61 and 63. And then in mid-December, he played one of the quote-unquote silly season events, played that Grant Thornton Invitational, where PGA players pair with LPGA players down there in Naples. And he partnered with Florin Coghlan of the LPGA Tour and won the event, actually. So at least he's in good form. And, there's not much to read into that in terms of a scramble-type format, but he is at least active. So Andrew Novak, 150-1. And then another guy I always love to play on, like, easier courses. And that was Seamus Power, who I found at 170-1, T7 at the RSM in the season finale. Was only 31st last week, but was top 10 in approach. Hasn't played here in 3 years, but he's got two top 15s and four appearances. So these easy courses where you got to shoot mid 20 unders, that's kind of Seamus Power's wheelhouse. Some guys are better on like the more difficult layouts. Seamus Power is good on these resort type tracks. So very much worth a bomb, I think, this week.
Yeah. Ooh, so I actually did the shotgun scattershot approach, and not you know, just different strategy from y'all. It's not that my strategy, y'all strategy, whatever is right in a tournament like this. I think it's just how you want to take it on. I mean, the shortest guy I have is 55-1. Like, I just started way out at 55-1 and whatever. And it's not that I don't think that the odds are necessarily right on the shorter guys, but for me, given the way that this tournament sets up, I just don't. If I miss out on whatever, Ben Griffin winning at 20-1, then whatever, I miss out on Ben Griffin missing at 20-1. I can live with that. And so I started way out at 55-1. I think it was Kelly, or maybe it was both of y'all, I don't know, but Alex Noren at 55-1 was the first one on my card. He modeled extremely well for me, super, super high in just about everything that I was looking at. That, you know, again, like I said, I only ran two different models, but the model, one of them loved him. 6th overall in the model for Alex Noren in that. And so he obviously got to make the card. If it's way out at 55-1, he's 6th overall for me. So definitely the start there. Then I get to 57-1 at Kurt Kitayama. Kurt Kitayama comes in checking just about every single box that I was looking for this week. Wasn't expecting to get on Kurt Kitayama, honestly, but it's like, I think too, guys, is because I did go so far out that like the sum of Kurt Kitayama's parts are probably better than when you like chop him up or whatever, because he kind of will do this number, right? Like the up and downs with Kurt Kitayama, and we like him on certain courses and hate him on other courses and whatever and all of that, but it's like, you go with this big giant look at him, and then it's like, okay, he does a decent amount of things well. And I was actually pretty shocked to be on Kitayama and for him to be as high as he was. But like I said, this is another dude that was 18th for me in what I was looking for here. Obviously a good ball striker, a dude that can go out. This is like his strokes gained total is really, really high in all of this. And you can kind of see some of the upside here as Kelly pulls him and pops him open. You see there is a win in there. There's a T9, there's a T5, you know, and it's like, you know, there's some cuts and some low ones in there, but I'm betting outrights on a guy that's 57-1. I'm okay. I'm fine with that. If he's going to miss some cuts and whatnot, if his spike week can get as high as actually winning a tournament or in those kind of top fives and stuff, then hopefully I can get him on one of those spike weeks and make some money off of him. So Kurt Kitayama at 57-1, and then literally everybody else is 83-1 or longer. I mean, Davis Thompson, Wes, I also landed on Pearson Cootie. By the way, Pearson Cootie, 7th overall in one of my models. Like, I was like, what in the holy? I'm going, all right, Scotty Scheffler, Rico Hoey, because he always models well, Ludwig, yeah. Ben Griffin, Sam Burns, Pearson Cootie. Like, what the hell? Like, one of these names is not like the others, you know? I mean, like, it's like, huge name, Pearson Cootie. Like, so, you know, like, what the holy hell is going on here? So
I've just got my last 36 pulled up right now, Matt, and he is number 15 in that. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's wild to me. And so I get in and look, and like, he's literally immediately followed Cantlay, Harry Hall, Russell Henley. It's like all these like huge name dudes, and then Pearson Cootie, like stuck in the middle of all of them. But yeah, I mean, you can get Pearson if you're in a circle market, 90. If you're in other markets, you can still get 80. Like, you know, again, a guy at 7th overall in a model, I'm never going to complain about you getting an 80-1, but a lot of weird stuff that you start to like, right? I mean, strokes gained on par fives over the last 150 rounds, he is 3rd in this field in over 150 rounds in stroke gain on par fives, which we said are going to be so important here. Birdie or better percentage, 11th overall in this field over the last 150 rounds. I mean, that is just absolutely phenomenal. So I Pearson Cootie gets on the card. Like I said, Davis Thompson as well. Weirdly modeled super high for me. Nothing to really love about Davis Thompson, but just kind of like overall middling all the way across, which I guess if you can hit a spike, then, you know, good on you. But it's kind of like, he's also like your typical dude that you want to bet as Kelly pulls his stuff open. You can see like, that's why you bet outrights on him and never anything other than an outright, because he's either going to miss the cut or you see T11s and T19s and T18s and whatever. Like he can either get into the top 20 or he's going to get cut. And so you don't want to be betting miss make the cut on a guy like that. You don't want to be like betting him in head-to-heads or whatever because the volatility is so high, but like maybe you can hit a spike week on one of these easy courses. So
he always looks like there. He's about five Kevin, minutes away from crying. Like, you know, you ever notice that about Davis Thompson? He always looks like he's about to tear up. I'm always pulling for Davis just to make it through. Side note.
Maybe he will cry, but it'll be tears of joy if he, when he wins the tournament.
Go. Yeah, you know, there you
on
go.
Sunday
yeah.
or whatever. Hopefully. Maybe we can get some tears of joy out of him. A T11, you know, at the Wyndham. That's kind of, you know, you kind of hold on to something like that where he's green across the board, and maybe he can get one of those weeks. You know, we talk about guys that just model super well, and we always joke about Rico Hoey. I don't know what it is about models that I make in tournaments in which he plays, but Kevin Yu always friggin' models like super well. And like you go in, I mean, he's 14th in this model. And this is, again, like over 150 rounds, and you go across and you're like, well, I see why he models well. He's kind of good at everything, but not great at anything.
He's a big birdie maker.
Yeah, it's like that's going to model pretty well for you, you know? And so maybe I can catch something here with Kevin Yu. But again, this guy's 100-1 and inside the top 15 in modeling. And like you can't really hate on that. And you can see that obviously the big problem's been around the green. But like we said, if he's around the green in this tournament, then he's not going to win anyway. So I don't really care. So if he's not hitting the greens and getting opportunities to make birdies, then, well, my 100-1 is toast anyway. So didn't really care about the around the green stats, and we'll see if he can't put something together. Decent little putter for the majority there
that's pretty good right
on
there.
The screen, so yeah. Maybe he can catch some lightning in a bottle there. And then last three dudes are all guys that we have bet at one time or another over the last year. I had no idea I'd be betting two maxes this week, and no one of them isn't even Homa. I thought about adding Homa just so I could say I bet three maxes, but I didn't do it. Grazerman and McGreevy, both of them make the card for me this week. 120 and 150-1 on both of those. Grazerman inside the top 20 in both of those models that I ran. And it's like, yeah, there's stuff to hate about him, mainly his wedge game. Like his wedge play is pretty bad comparatively to everybody else in this field. But outside of that, pretty good birdie, you know, makes a bunch of birdies, good on par fives, like all the other stuff that we really liked here. He's a decent putter as well. Over the last 150 rounds, he's actually seventh in this field in strokes gained putting and all of that. And so it's just kind of one of those deals. He's all over the place, and that's why he's out at 120-1. But, you know, you can see he gets cut, and then he's got a couple of second place finishes. Like, I mean, like, give me that at 120-1, right? I mean, give me the dude that if he puts it all together – can peak and get into the top five. And that's kind of what you're looking for out of him. And then Max McGreevy was just, I thought the price was way too high at 150-1 to where he was really showing up in the models for me. And you go in and you break it down and you're like, okay, I kind of start to understand a little bit with this. Like if you look at his like strokes gained total and you look at his, you know, you start to look at his like ball striking and his birdie or better, which is all of the, you know, the, all these things actually fit pretty well for him. And then guys, I'm going to try to be early as opposed to late. We talked about him at the end of last season. I think I played him in the very last podcast we did last season or something, but I'm going to see if old John Kiefer can put it together here at 150-1 and, you know, pull a Nick Dunlap or something, you know, kind of come out of nowhere and win this thing when, you know, golf Knicks have heard of him, but like everybody else is not. And so, Kiefer at 151 with that skill set that he put together. This is kind of, Wes, you said, sometimes you got to go with a gut thing here. There's not a lot of, we don't have a lot of data on him for the PGA Tour, obviously. So I'm just kind of like going off of stuff that we've seen from him on smaller tours. But John Kiefer at 150-1 with kind of the gut play of the week for me and see if he can get it done there. But like I said, scattershot stuff for me, it's at just huge prices. And maybe we can get one of these huge prices home here to kick off the Amex.
Hell yeah, man. Hey, who's a few names that you guys have that you absolutely do not have any interest in betting this week? Because there was a few of those for me, too.
Well, I think I kind of – basically anyone with a number that didn't begin with five was basically for me. Like, yeah. I mean, like, almost like anyone that didn't have a five to start their name was basically that answer for me.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of Siwoo out there this week. And I worry about the putting. I know that he has won here before.
Yep.
In 2021, and that's why his odds are at 35, maybe when they should be at 60. But I worry about the putting here. I think for Siwoo. He was very widely tipped in the market this week. And look, Siwoo has been great on Pete Dye's over the years. He's usually one of the better ones that you see there, but I didn't have a ton of interest necessarily in him.
I bet him last week, Wes, I'm right there with you. I bet him last week. If you watch Siwoo, you know what, you could throw Connors into this conversation too, but if you watch these guys on Sunday like I did, just like, it's like, there's Siwoo Kim with an 8-footer for birdie, and it's like, oh, he missed it by 3 feet to the left. Like, it's I brought it up earlier. I think weather did impact that tournament more than we thought it was going to, but, like, that was tough to watch, I have no desire to go back to it. I'm with you, like, the numbers, and he rated out pretty highly for me. I don't think you're crazy if you go and bet him, but man, I think you're going to get Siwoo with better numbers down the road.
And another player who I really like, but I think a lot of people like him this year because he's going to break through. You just can sense it, is Michael Chorbornson. But yeah, I don't know if it's going to be here necessarily. Right. Yeah. He's going to win that first PGA Tour event, maybe multiple this year. But I feel like he's one of those guys where the secret's out. And it's almost like you're betting and you're chasing him every single week. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to lose a few times before you win on the guy. And sometimes that happens with players. That happened to a guy named Scheffler a few years ago, where people were chasing it, and it doesn't happen right away. And you know it's eventually going to happen. And I think it probably will for Chorbornson. But maybe wait. I might wait for an event later in the spring is where I could see him breaking through.
I completely agree with those two names, Wes. I did not have them written down. I'm glad you brought both of them up. And don't worry, all these names will still apply to Matt's rule of being under the 5-0 starter. But like Ludvig, like I love Ludvig. I don't think this is a great spot for him and, you know, his biggest weapon off the tee, right? Like I don't think 22-1 on Ludvig's a good bet. Sam Burns a little short for me. I know this is a very pro Sam Burns podcast, but 25-1 felt aggressive on him. A little bit.
Yeah, he's the one that I wished would have been, we would have gotten a drift just because he didn't have the greatest of seasons 40. Last year. And I thought like maybe we could get a little bit of drift. And if he was 40, then I would have started in the 40s because I think that's fair on him. But yeah, it's, you know, being 25, 22, 23, whatever, the various sites out there, it just was, it's a little too short for old Sammy there. So I was kind of hoping we get a drift, didn't get a drift.
Yeah. And people remember when he was like right at the lead 2 years ago and he hit it in the water. That was when Dunlap won. Dunlap held off him and Thomas. I think Cantlay was in the mix when Dunlap was still at Alabama and was an amateur. But yeah, Sam Burns was primed to win. He's got a couple good finishes here, but Yeah. To me, if he was like right at 40, I think he'd be a bet just because the putting stats are stupendous. He was number one this week for me in putting. But yeah, a little bit short, I think, even in this quality of field at the top.
Yeah, those were just a few that it was like, man, I quickly passed on. It was like, I don't really get this number. Let me move. And the one other guy that I might end up betting, I'll throw out there, though, like I was a little surprised to see Straka's price be as long as it was. Like he just won here last year. Like I think a lot of people still kind of have end of season stuff in their mind where he had to withdraw from the playoff event. I know he had the issues with what his premature kid and stuff like that's awful. He had to go through that, him and his wife, right, for the couple months, August into October. They had to deal with that. But he finished third in the Hero World Challenge like a month ago, won this event last year. I think if you like Straka, and loved playing him last year, I don't think there's any reason to not return to him at 45-50-1. I thought that was a pretty good number on him.
Yeah, I think that price is what it is because he didn't play a lot of golf, like you mentioned. The last what is seen as an official event before the Hero World Challenge that he played was the Tour Championship. Mm. So that's 15 weeks in between. He also, of course, was a member of the European Ryder Cup team, but he didn't play a lot of the European events, the DP World Tour events that they have in the fall, like the Dunhill Links or any of the stuff in Dubai or Abu Dhabi. So very lightly played. Maybe that's going to work for him, and time off sometimes is good for these guys, but that is a little bit of a layoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He modeled great, obviously, because, you know, again, if you go to like the super wide lens, you know, I mean, that's obviously going to put him way up there, but yeah, just didn't appeal to me. And maybe Wes, like you said, maybe it's more just because he was out of sight, out of mind, and I didn't think to bet him here at all. But if he has a good showing, it's not going to surprise me. But like I said, it's just this event for me, there's when we've seen so many bombs win, when I know how it's going to be set up, when I know how the course is going to be played, I've watched this thing every year for the last however many billion years that I've watched it. Like, I just know how it's going to go more times than not. And yeah, you get the ROMs every now and then, but like, it's probably going to be somebody with a fat number next to their name. And that's kind of where I'm, at with this thing.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm glad we did the whip around and talk about other guys. So I think Wes made some great points on some of the ones I asked about. And shout out to DraftKings. I have a feeling this is just because we have the three-course rotation that they didn't really want to put first-round leader for each one. But, Matt, I've been asking for this market for like 6 years. If you remember back to the primetime action days, just give me the low 18-hole score in the tournament. I think that's a fun one. And DraftKings, I hope that you continue posting this every week and we get more books to do that. Scheffler, 10-1. Ludvig Åberg, 35-1. Sam Burns, 35-1. Ben Griffin, 35-1. Everybody else, 40-1 or longer.
That's the market where I would... That's the market where you could suck me back in on Rico Hoey, because can only put one friggin' round together. Like he very well could shoot the low round of the whole tournament and still be like T27 in this thing. Like that is very well within his range of outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that market now that I accidentally switched out of it. I can't find my way back to it, but good on you, DraftKings. That was that's a cool one to have up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Guys, so a lot of the odds that we'll mention here, odds that we got stuff at, I will work and endeavor for us moving forward to talk more about the current odds that are out there and whether those odds are bettable or not. Because at the end of the day, I know you don't give a shit as to what we got our these prices at. And so it definitely doesn't matter what we got it at. And because by the time you listen to this, it's like, is it still a bet at the number that we're at right now? So we'll do better about that. I promise you, moving forward on the rest of these podcasts, so that we can give you the
real
most
quick
actionable betting information here, as opposed to like, hey, look how cool we are because we bet this earlier than you did. So
I get your point on that, Matt, and that's true. We're gonna always do that, but like, I wanted to make a point of that this week because I also think this is a reminder. If you've got one book that you're betting at, or two books or something, this is the time, and you're gonna go bet golf season. You need to add some other books out there and some other outs, because this was it was major shops that I was bouncing around between checking numbers, and they were very, very different. Price shopping is extremely important for everybody.
Yeah, and like as we said, you know, last week, by the way, we don't get paid for mentioning the sites that we use to help us out. Of course, you know, a lot of us bet first Data Golf and Rick's site at Rick Rungo, but also don't get paid by any of the sports books. And I will say, if you're in a Circa market, a lot of times Circa will have numbers that are better than some of those. If you're in a Bet365 market, they have each way betting, which you don't get in any of the other books and stuff. And so, like, if you can get that as an out, another different way that you can go about approaching golf betting. I know that I have seen recently, guys, and like, this is a hat tip to the big major books out there. I have been betting more at MGM and Caesars than I used to, because sometimes they have the best number on a particular golfer that I'm looking at and whatever. So to kind of to Kelly's point, I mean, if you really, really want to do this and try to maximize what you're doing, I would say minimum of three different books. If you can afford to put $50 in six different books, then that's always better too, because that's going to give you the widest range to try and make sure that you get the best number in your account. But I've definitely started to notice that sometimes MGM has the best numbers on the guys that I'm looking at. Sometimes Caesars has had the best numbers on the guys I'm looking at, FanDuel, whatever, you know. And so those are, The golf in particular, the variance in the different numbers is super interesting. I mean, Wes, it's, you know, Circa sometimes has the best numbers, but the problem is that sometimes Circa has the worst numbers because podcasts that come out before ours, people will say different names, and then those names get bet, and that like shifts the whatever. So it's kind of like it almost depends on when you get to some of these books as well.
Yeah, exactly. Timing is everything. And I think particularly in golf, and you will see these guys that have these great numbers because they bet right on open. Yeah. When you have it, if you haven't even had a chance, like you're betting football and basketball over the weekend, you hadn't had a chance to dive in until like Monday morning. Sometimes these numbers are going to be gone. So don't worry about that either. It's like, man, I missed him at 80-1. So I had to settle for 66. Well, it's still a 66-1 winner, you know, like don't kick yourself for that. I mean, don't bet a guy at like 25-1 if he was like 75-1 or something to start the week. Yeah, that's too far. But if you get 60 when he's 80, or if you get 40 when he's 55, like that's okay. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. on all that. Guys, of course, all of these will be up over at VSiN.com. You can go to the picks page. You can also go to VSiN.com and get Wes's full write-up on everything if you want the even more detailed version of what this course looks like and the different things that we're looking at. If you want to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, you can go in. We're running specials all the time over there, so be sure and check all of that stuff out. Again, if you found us over on the YouTube, hello, thanks, appreciate it. Go ahead, hit the subscribe button. If you are listening to the audio version, take 2 seconds. Go in the description, click the link, go over to the YouTube channel, hit the subscribe button over there as well. It gives you options, you know? Gives you, everyone's got the YouTube app on their phone now, so it gives you options. You can watch us if you want to and see Wes in his glorious Indiana bomber and Indiana hat right now, the matching outfit as he made it down to Miami and watched his Indiana Hoosiers win the national championship. Wes, it was, I know it was a fantastic experience for you, just the whole ride top to bottom. And the fact that it did actually culminate in the national championship is pretty cool.
No, thank you very much. Now, I will say I've never been more grateful than to not have to travel in this upcoming week. It has been a ride, Indianapolis to Pasadena to Atlanta to Miami, of course. So, I am glad not to transfer. People were texting me, hey, coming back for the celebration at the stadium in Bloomington on Saturday. I'm like, no, I wish I was there, but no, I'll take a pass on that. Send me one of the rally towels if you can grab an extra one to complete my collection. But yeah, I had to go. I had to go on this journey, man. And I was like, I'm going to ride it until as long as it lasts. And it lasted through 16 wins and no losses. So very grateful for that.
I'll be happy to be sitting here on this podcast a year from now celebrating LSU's next national championship as Lane Kiffin has gone in and absolutely destroyed the transfer portal because LSU's got a lot of money and money buys a lot of players these days. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to have just a whole team of multimillionaires out there on the field, like already from dudes from the transfer portal. So it better equal some wins or the people down there are going to be certainly upset. Kelly, Florida State, I don't know when you're making it back. I don't know.
Hopefully people are spending money or everybody's just like me. You don't have any money. Stop calling me. Stop asking me for money. I'm not giving you money for anything. Okay. Stop freaking calling me. That's all I care about. I don't care if we ever win again or not.
Kelly's like, I'm not NIL on any of these damn people. I'm not NIL on anyone.
I'm not supporting any of these damn kids. They can make it on their own just like I did, okay? Come on. Stop calling. Matt, let's pretend
you
like
go and work part-time just like I did, all right? That's what you can do.
Matt, let's pretend
drink cheap beers. You don't get to drink name brand beers.
That's right. Natty Light.
Just like I did.
There's going to be a Natty Light statue in Tallahassee anyways. You just get on it, okay? Let's pretend like Wes isn't here for a second. Like, this is like the Christmas tree or like wishing someone Happy New Year's. When do I get to see Wes not wearing Indiana gear again? Like,
next week, if he's
wearing Indiana gear next week, okay, we get to say something, right? Okay, we get to say something.
It's after New Year's. You got to take the Christmas lights down.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's time. Like, it's going.
So I mean, we've done
normal Wes.
6 golf podcasts somehow with him in Indiana gear. Like, this is stretching all the way back to September. It's incredible. It's a great, great run, Wes. I'm so happy for you, bro.
No. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Guys, appreciate you watching. Like we said, go ahead, hit the subscribe button. Also on the audio side, of course, while we're pimping the hell out of the new YouTube channel, of course, if you're listening on the audio side, we always love a hit the subscription button. We also love a 5-star review and any reviews that you want to put in there. Do appreciate that a ton as well. Just trying to build up that thing over there so the bosses don't fire us. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Amex bets.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if they could just if you just visited the channel, just auto subscribe. You know?
That would be
against
cool.
your will.
That would be cool. We'll work on that.